Welcome to the Confident ROI. Today's show, we have retired Sergeant Major Max A. Garcia, and he shares with us what he's learned as a leader within the Marine Corps and how the Marines developed their young soldiers. And a lot of it has to do with mentoring and peeling back the onion. And now he's doing that and applying it in the civilian world. We touch on a lot of different subjects in terms of what's going on within larger organizations or culture, and then what you can do to improve people's performance and your own performance. So I hope you enjoy the interview. It's retired Sergeant Major Max A. Garcia. Max Garcia, welcome to the Confident ROI.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Alex. It's a really pleasure to be here. I'm honored.
Enjoy having you on. And you're calling in from Australia today. I'm in Denver, Colorado. And thanks to these magic wires, it's actually no marginal cost to do this as well.
Right. Very convenient these days.
It is. And you got a lot of experience working in a large organization. You're a retired sergeant major from the Marine Corps. You've led large groups within the Marines. And I thought it would be interesting to talk about what you learned in there, how you're applying it in the civilian world. And why don't you share with the audience kind of some of your experience in the Marine Corps, working with in a group that has their own culture, but it's also within the military and then also within the federal government. So that's kind of cultures within cultures and in different ways of doing things. And there's got to be some conflict and frustration. Could you share with the audience some of your experience there and how you deal with that?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Thanks again for having me. It's an honor and privilege to be here. So the unique thing about the culture in the Marine Corps, which probably is the same in a sense in every military, but really strong in the Marine Corps, is that we are big on mentorship. We are big on taking care of our own. So, you know, in the corporate world, I can only imagine that if someone gets a speeding ticket, then, you know, that's their problem. If someone gets, you know, in trouble, they have trouble financially, they have trouble in their marriage, and that's kind of their problem. You know, so-and-so is having this, that's their problem. Sorry, that's nice. Let me know if we can help them. In the Marine Corps, we dive deep. And unfortunately, that takes a lot of time. It also causes a lot of frustration, especially when you're in charge of a lot of people. I was the senior enlisted Marine for the largest operational battalion in the Marine Corps. So I had Marines in different countries all the time, most of which were in different places in California. But when something bad happens with them, and, you know, when the majority of them are age 21 or less, those things that happen tend to be, you know, very frustrating. You know, at that age, you know, they're high testosterone people. They get, you know, they get in trouble. Sometimes they get arrested. Sometimes they do foolish things. You know how it is for guys that age. And we care about every aspect of their life. So if something happens to a Marine, the middle of the night, I'm getting a phone call. If it happens to more than one Marine in the middle of the night, which is very likely since we're talking well over 1,000 people, I'm getting multiple phone calls throughout the night, multiple phone calls about each Marine that it happened to. And then, of course, dealing with that the next day. It is a unique culture, but it is good in a sense that we are like a family. We even call ourselves a family oftentimes. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and is that with the Marines, how did that culture develop? Was it out of necessity? Was it a conscious choice? And what does that entail when what it means diving deep?
Right. I couldn't tell you how long ago it developed because it was like that before I came in. But I can say that it's to the point that there's even Marine Corps orders written about mentorship, Marine Corps orders written about counseling, how often it should be done, how it should be done. There are templates of things that you should counsel Marines about, how often you should counsel them. And those things are very, very important because, I mean, just looking at any world, whether it's the military, corporate world, a lot of people are playing what I call the guessing game. You know, here's what I hear often in my coaching. Oh, I'm trying so hard to get promoted. I work so hard. I work so many hours. And then I ask them, okay, have you ever had a sit down with your boss and asked his or her expectations? And a lot of times the answer is no. Well, in that case, you know, you're using your psychic ability to decide, you know, what's right or what's wrong. And if you're working 12 hours a day, that's nice and everything. But if you're doing 12 hours of the wrong thing, then that's ineffective. Where counseling you know, the boss can say, hey, these three things are important to me, A, B, C, and D. Then all you have to do is go shoot on that exact target, A, B, C, or D. Because if I can relay the Marine Corps as an example, so some officers want to see their sergeants out there leading physical training, inspecting uniforms. And other officers don't care as much as long as the maintenance gear is up, the supply gear is sent out on time, the vehicles are ready to go to the field, you know, weapons are ready. That's all they care about. For me, I'm a well-rounded person. I think everyone should be good at their job, but also be proficient in all areas.
So the Marine Corps actually, they got it. They stipulate how you're going to mentor. And there's two things there that was interesting to me was, one, is it effective? Because a lot of times organizations will have all these rules, but this kind of like they're dead. Nobody really follows them.
Yeah. You know, right.
Are they active? Are they a good guide? And then maybe, are they a good guide? They're mandated, but a lot of organizations say, hey, you're going to do this, but they don't.
Yes, of course. So the biggest thing for this is it boils down to the unit and the unit enforcing these kind of things. So for example, if I get someone that comes to me and says, hey, this Marine missed movement. This Marine was unauthorized absence, what is known as AWOL in the Army and other branches of service. This Marine has been AWOL for the third time. You know, we want to reduce him in rank. We wanted to fine him this money. We want you to do what they call non-judicial punishment on him. So then I'll say, okay, great. Sounds like he's a problem. Can you show me his counseling jacket where you've counseled him written and verbally on what days? Can you show me his counseling jacket where he's been told that this is unacceptable and that kind of thing? And now that's just one example, because obviously being, you know, late, not where you're supposed to be, that's kind of an obvious one. But when we're talking about poor performance, you know, the Marine thinks he's doing a good job, but you think he's not. Show me documentation where you counseled him on his expectations and show me documentation on where you counsel me where he's at fault. Because if not, then I'm going to side with the Marine. Does that answer your question?
Well, yeah. I mean, does the mentoring, you say it's mandated, does the mentoring in general work in the Marine Corps?
So I'll fall back to my original answer that the onus is on the unit. If you have a good unit, if you have good people who are in charge that enforce the policy, yes. If not, and it's not important to them, then obviously it can fall to the wayside.
Sure.
Recently, the Marine Corps has updated that policy because we did have an order in place that wasn't working too well. You know, the template that they wanted you to use wasn't as good. And they recently updated the order to give more leeway to the leadership to decide how to do things versus so many detailed micromanagement type templates, if you will. So it's gotten better, and the overall thing is that it's at least well known and respected that you mentor your Marines and that you counsel your Marines. It's supposed to be every 30 days. I don't think that we do that because that's pretty hard.
That's a lot, right?
But you should at least sit down every 30 days.
Can you share with us? You're talking about dealing with high testosterone 21-year-olds, and can you share with us a story about how mentorship helped? And because I mean, the Marine Corps, I mean, the reality is the young soldiers, that's your product. I mean, if you don't have that's your I don't know, capacity, but it's your manpower, right? And so you're investing in your capital stock there. Can you give an example of how it's worked?
Yes, absolutely. I'll give you an example. Just yesterday, less than 24 hours ago, yesterday, a Marine contacted me that was in my battalion in 2014-2015 timeframe over in Okinawa, Japan. Now, he's well out of the Marine Corps by now, but he contacted me because he said that he was having issues with alcohol and contemplating suicide. That he was close to leaving his family, his family was close to leaving him. And he didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to deal with it. So the point I'm getting at is that somewhere along the line that I've earned this guy's trust and confidence enough, even though it's been a few years, that he reached out to me out of all people for guidance. I don't know why he waited so long, but towards last resort, he reached out to me out of all people. So that's where it pays off over and over again. And now when you're working together, then that happens several times a day. It could be for a wide variety of issues. Obviously, this is a more serious one, but the more, you know, trust and confidence you can earn, the more people will come to you with serious problems rather than keeping it to themselves. And it pays off over and over again.
Well, that's interesting because the Marines, you're a drill sergeant, we were talking earlier. And so you're used to increasing your volume in order to get something through is kind of the classic way to train in the military, right? But it sounds like the Marines have recognized, look, that only goes so far. And to really, to develop people, you have some softer skills from that. Is that accurate?
Yes, absolutely. So the thing is, first of all, is that as leaders, we gain respect from our actions, from the things we do, not from a title that we carry or a title that's labeled on us. And if you look at my business card, and for a long time, my email signature at work said at the bottom, firm but fair. So you mentioned the whole drill instructor thing. I absolutely have that in my toolbox, which also comes in very handy because if I get somebody who's brought to me, hey, this person's, you know, been late the second time. This person had an alcohol-related incident, but they're a good Marine. What should we do? I will bring them in and I will wear them out. I will make them wish they weren't born for a couple minutes, but then they'll get back on the right path versus, you know, having to take rank from them or some other kind of punishment rather than leading with the pin. Leading heart to heart. So firm but fair leadership. So they know that, if they screw up, if they're going to be out of line, then I'm going to wound their inner child for a minute. But they also know if there's a problem that, on my website, you might've noticed it says I'm the solution sergeant major. I'm sorry. It says that on my Instagram page, I'm the solution sergeant major.
Can you give some examples of that and how you've been able to be the solution sergeant major?
Because honestly, it doesn't matter what it is. People bring things to me all the time. I'll give you an example that's not people related. So I check into my last unit, 3rd Assault Amphibian Battalion at Camp Pendleton, California. And one of our companies, about 200 Marines, is located in 29 Palms, California, a few hours drive, a miserable drive away, which when you take out the commander and the sergeant major and a few other key staff members, for 3 hours each way, 6 hours round trip, plus say 3 hours on the ground, they've missed an entire day at work or longer. It's ineffective. So when I checked in, I say to my commanding officer, I said, yeah, this is a long travel. I say to him, hey, if I can get you air and fly up there, military air to fly you up there at no cost, would you be interested? And everybody in the meeting looks at me like I'm crazy. So what I do, I start using my network, my Rolodex, I start, calling people I know. And next thing you know, our next trip, we fly up there instead of driving up there. There's a solution to everything. The thing is, people are quick to turn their minds off and say, oh, that's not possible. And then they stop right there. I'd like to have that car, but I can't afford it. So their mind stops right there rather than thinking, how can I afford it? How can I get an air up there? I happen to know that we have floods of helicopters and planes in the Marine Corps. I know that Camp Pendleton is the closest base to 29 Palms. I know someone's going up there. Let me see if I can put my thumb out and hitch a ride with someone using my network. I had been at the time over 20 years. My commander was the same. He had been in even longer than me. And I don't see why we can't get on one of these planes. And we did. We did it over and over again. So saved a lot of hours, a lot of manpower, and a lot of personal money because we'd spend our own money and gas to drive up there and back.
Oh, wow. Well, and so is that one of the keys is something you learn working within a big organization that's part of a much bigger one is to, you talk about overcoming obstacles. I think you have the Sergeant Major Max Garcia 2 steps to overcome obstacles. Is that part of it or?
Yes. So absolutely. So, that is just one method, if you will. Mm-hmm. But I can say this, is that whatever it is that you're going after in life, whatever goal it is, you must write it down. The thing is that most people are walking around with whatever it is they want in life, whatever it is they want really bad, a promotion, to buy a house, a relationship with someone. Most people are walking around with a vague and mystic concept of the things they want to have, do, or become in life. The difference is once you put the pen to paper, it's yours. And the best example I can think of this is millions of people on New Year's Eve make a New Year's resolution. But I'd venture to say that now we're in the month of June, most people don't even remember what their New Year's resolution was, let alone did they accomplish it. And why? Because they didn't write it down. And that's the first step.
You know, and why do you think the writing helps?
You know, the writing piece, goodness, that is a great question. And that's a very good question. You know, honestly, I couldn't give you a solid answer on why, but I can say from my perspective, I think it has something to do with the subconscious mind. Because once you put the pen to paper, obviously you're engaging your mind in a more direct manner rather than just like a daydream that floats around in the back of your head. Maybe you engage it once in a while and you write it down. And the other thing is that you look at it twice a day. I learned this from Earl Nightingale, Secret Science of Getting Rich. The Strangest Secret. Earl Nightingale says, you know, read it every day, once in the morning and once at night. And the thing is, that is definitely a subconscious mind thing because you're reading it every day. When you do it, you're also exercising faith. Faith being the most important thing. You know, we talk about faith very loosely, like, oh, have faith, believe in yourself. We say those terms very, very loosely in society, but they're almost meaningless. But what does it mean? How do you invoke that? How do you exercise that by reading what you want to have, do, or become every single day? Most people have such vague goals in the back of their mind, like, I want to lose weight. But when you write down, I will weigh 150 pounds by November 1st, that brings with it a whole different energy because one, you're focusing on what you want, not what you don't want, but also you're becoming more specific. And then you see it every day, 150, 150, that becomes your focus. It helps you. So to answer your question, Alex, because it helps you focus your conscious mind and your subconscious mind when you write down what you want to accomplish.
Yeah, well, I was listening to you. I was reminded, I was listening to, I think it was Dr. Sapolsky. He wrote, he's a neuroscientist, and he wrote a couple books on neuroscience and kind of for layman. And one of the things I think they found, was, if I remember this correctly, was when we write our whatever handed we are, that hand has the best connections with our brain. We have the most dense connections. And so when we're actually writing, handwriting, it's better hardwired into our brain. Then there's a better connection there. And you know, it's something he was handwriting he would handwrite his writing. He found it work better, just connection wise.
Yes, and statistics say that. Yeah. Yes, statistics say that just by simply writing down your goal, you're much more likely to achieve it. Now, I don't want to get into exact percentages of that because there is conflicting word, different percentages online when you read up. However, I would go for the much more likely than not likely, and in the sense that once you write it down, you're just drastically probably 10 times more likely to accomplish what you set out to do just by putting the pen to paper.
Yeah, I think it also changes the dynamic. We end up listening a lot to our brain, and we listen a lot to what's going on in our head. But in terms of talking to ourselves, usually we're not transmitting. Usually we're in receive mode, and our brain kind of has that ongoing dialogue. And a lot of it, we're kind of predisposed to be negative, to survive in the wild.
Very much. You know, I hear it all the time. Oh, I can't seem to lose weight, or I can't do math. You know, I hear that one a lot. Well, as soon as you say, I can't do math to save my butt, I hear that a lot. As soon as you say, I can't do math, then your brain, it's like it shuts off that part of the subconscious mind that could help you to learn math. Your subconscious mind is designed to support you. It doesn't know deep down that you really want to do math, but every time you keep saying that you can't do something, you keep promising yourself you can't do something, then you're reinforcing that over and over. It's almost like we love these people that say, I can eat all day and not gain a pound. And we love these people, right? I can eat all day and not gain a pound. The reason is because they keep saying that. So they reaffirm their subconscious mind. Their subconscious mind programs the chemical makeup in their body, the digestion of their food. I don't know how it works, but all I do know is that it does work.
So you had a long career in the military. You served in a number of tours of duty in war areas, and you were able to mentor and develop young soldiers. And now you've retired. You're now working with civilians. You're helping them with the lessons you've learned from the Marine Corps. Is that an accurate description?
It is an accurate description. However, I would consider myself even different from most Marines, because while I was in the Marine Corps, I did a lot of self-study on self-help and development, a study of the subconscious mind. I did a lot of self-study to be able to bring myself to this point in my life, which also aided me greatly in my time in the Marine Corps. So it's almost like I have two tools in my toolbox, the one being the self-help and development study that I've had, but also, yes, my time in the Marine Corps and using the leadership things. I learned a lot of great leadership things while I was in the Marine Corps that I still apply today. So yes, to answer your question, plus one.
All right, well, there's a lot there I'd like to cover. What you mentioned developing the subconscious. Any major influences there, or what you could share with the audience? They're interested in that?
Yes, absolutely. So the first thing I watched was a movie called The Secret. It's an excellent, excellent movie. I cannot say enough great things about it. I believe in the concepts taught in the movie The Secret so much that I recently wrote a book and published a book with one of the people in the movie. His name is Joe Vitale. And that movie opened my eyes. And then I went from there with a lot of self-study. Some of my favorite authors include Bob Proctor, Marshall Silver, and a lot of people who are associated with that movie. Joe Vitale. I even like Tony Robbins. And then I just started studying a lot of those things in great depth. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, Alex? Absolutely. Absolutely. And so can you give an example of how you work with people now?
Yes. So I do two different things. One, I like to speak to crowds. So whenever I can get a speaking engagement, I love public speaking. The larger the crowd, the better. And the other thing is I coach people one-on-one. I get contacted all the time for life coaching. And that is a wide variety. Honestly, I need to work to narrow it down, because I get too many people contacting me on too many subjects. I really need to buckle down and narrow down onto one specialty, which I have not done yet because it's still early for me. And I'm used to that. I'm used to, you know, you'd think, okay, Marines, that's a specialty, but no, they bring with them a wide variety of challenges that I'm used to, you know, spinning the wheel every time someone comes in my office. So I'm kind of used to that and comfortable with that and like that excitement, but I need to buckle down and narrow down into one specialty.
Could you share with us maybe how you've helped someone in particular?
Sure. So I had the first thing that comes to my mind is I had a female Marine who, when I was in Okinawa, Japan, I was deployed somewhere, I forgot where. Anyways, we were deployed, maybe Korea, someplace like that. And this Marine was having alcohol issues. So for instance, we pulled into port and we had a few days off, and this Marine was coming in late, drinking too heavily, that kind of thing. And right away, the leadership wanted to punish her. So I start doing what we call in the Marine Corps, peeling back the onion. You know, what's going on? Because this Marine had been a good Marine up to this point. So I say, hey, bring her to my office. I have her sit down. I send the leadership away. It's just her and I. And I just look at her and I say, what's going on? And this Marine commences to tell me, she was a military police officer. And she commences to tell me that part of her job for a little while was she was doing work very similar to, if you remember the TV show, To Catch a Predator. So she was her job was to pose as a decoy online and, you know, attract predators and, you know, collaborate with authorities to make an arrest. She was involved in that, involved in, you know, seizing their electronic equipment, which, you know, sometimes even might have had child pornography or just vulgar things that this young Marine, who is probably 20 years old, 21 at the most,
jeez,
you know, was having to deal with. This was at her previous unit prior to getting to us.
Right.
And, sir, you know, have you seen anybody for, you know, oh, and by the way, her father was a veteran and was telling her he was going to commit suicide. And she was giving him all of her money to help him out because he was disabled, couldn't work, but he couldn't get any support from the government. So it was stressing her out financially. The whole bit. She was having a very rough time. So I find out all of this. The leadership knew none of it because it happened prior to her getting to us. And so I said to her, hey, have you seen anyone for mental health yet? She says, I went to make an appointment, but they told me my case wasn't urgent, that the soonest they could see me was next month. So how I was able to help her was, for one, listening. That's the biggest thing, is listening, shutting up and listening. Excuse me for saying that that way, but that is a challenge for a lot of leaders. We think we know it all. We ramble on too much, kind of like how I'm rambling on right now because you got me excited, Alex. So for one, I was able to coach her and guide her on how to deal with these things. I start talking to her about her father and, you know, what type of support is out there. We start brainstorming things. And then the next thing I did is I used my authority and made a phone call and jumped down a few people's throat for whoever gave her this bum guidance that the soonest we can help you is next month, because that is ridiculous. So for one, I used my authority for good. The other thing is I was able to guide her and coach her on her next few steps. And then I met with her several times again over that next several months until I left the unit.
And that's just part of mentoring, is just listening. Not just part of it. I mean, it's a big part of it to get it out there. She probably had it all bottled up.
Yes, absolutely. The thing is that oftentimes as human beings are too quick to judge, oh, this person's doing wrong, so that's it. And yes, while wrong, but hey, what's going on? Talk to me here. This isn't like you. I need you to talk to me, or otherwise I'm just going to assume that you know you're acting a fool for no reason. But listening is key. I learned from Marshall Silver, who I mentioned earlier. I'm a huge fan of his. He says, there is a reason we've been given two ears and only one mouth, is because we should listen more than we should talk.
Nice. So, I mean, that's something for anybody's in a leadership position, is listening to the people within their organization.
Right. We have this, I find the same in my coaching business a lot of times with families. Family, you know, I love family. They want to support us, but a lot of times family hears their advice. You need to do this. You have to do that. Just do this. And that's their extent of listening. That's the extent of the conversation. So yes, listen, I hear this over and over again. Too many people making a quick, rash, you know, one sentence answer to a problem, or one sentence answer to help someone. And that's ineffective. You have to take the time and actually...
You can make it worse, right?
That's right. Make it worse. And not only that, they lose confidence in you. They lose trust and confidence in you.
It's almost, you know, we're trying to, our brains are always trying to be as energy efficient as possible. It's a lot easier just to give a one word, one sentence command than tell me about what's the real problem here.
Right, right. Well, we're a fast society, especially Americans, you know, fast internet, instant coffee, microwavable, you know, drive through 1 minute or less, or it's free. We are a fast society. We want things. We want it now.
Except when it comes to dealing with like hard issues, we kind of beat around the bush with them versus, hey, you know, what is the issue here? What's going on? And that's just like an open-ended, you know, how long is this going to take?
Right, right. It does take time to deal with the hard issues. And, you know, people ask me all the time, so how long is your coaching session for? And my response to them is, you know, I'm not a doctor or something like that. I'm not going to kick you out after, you know, 1 hour exactly and the buzzer goes off. Really, my answer is as long as it takes. Because those things, you take issues, you can put a time limit on it, you set the timer, set it there, then it's too much intensity. And they're going to be, people are going to be less apt to tell you what's really going on and tell you everything. Because since we mentioned subconscious programming earlier, as a young child, that's where we get the majority of our subconscious programming when we're young. A lot of things that happen when we're age 7, 8 or less, that affects us our entire life. I mean, over and over again. And a lot of people leave that part out. We just talk about, hey, what's going on right now? What's bothering you right now? Okay, finances are bothering me, or my husband's bothering me, or this or that. But let me dig deeper. Have you ever been, you know, abused as a child? Has this ever happened as a child? What was your upbringing like? How was it in school? Oh, you're overweight in school and you got, you know, treated really bad for it. Okay, this could be part of the problem.
So taking the time to peel back the onion.
Yes. Here's a big one. I hear this all the time in subconscious programming. Parents and their kids. Oh, don't mind Sally. She's hiding behind my leg. Don't mind Sally. Sally's shy. So kids are taught to believe and do everything their parents tell them.
Right.
So if they hear mom or dad say over and over again that they're shy, then they believe it. I mean, they even believe in Santa Claus because their parents tell them. So if their parents say that they're shy over and over again in front of them, then they act on it. Not only that, they act on it their entire life until they make a conscious decision to become more confident. This is one of the things I work with people on over and over again. And I hear it all the time. I hear it at school. When I meet parents at my kid's school and I see the kid not really wanting to talk, And the first thing is, he's shy. Don't mind him. I go, man, why would you want to embed that in his?
Yeah, reinforce that.
And that's a cause of a lot of problems, because if they're adults and they have confidence issues, they struggle to approach someone for a date. They struggle to ask for a raise. They struggle to ask for the job. They struggle in a job interview. This is a lot of the reason why. So we have to work on that.
So you help them overcome that?
Absolutely. Over and over again.
And is that what are anything you can share with the audience on how, you know, is that everyone's got their own self limiting beliefs in that?
Right. That would probably take at least 2 cups of coffee.
All right. Well, would you like to share? We're kind of getting near the end of our time today, but what else would you like to share with the audience?
I will say this, Alex, since you asked me about that, one of the biggest things I do to help people is by simply changing their habits of how they think and speak about themselves. Like we mentioned earlier, people all the time are saying things like, I can't do this. Or, you know, okay, I'm going to try to go back to school. Try implies doubt. Try implies failure. Try gives you a way to be able to fail. So the biggest thing is, as I work with people on how they speak and how they think. The biggest thing is speaking, though, because you have to think first and then you speak. And if I can reverse the two, that is just a big, big thing, is how people talk to themselves. Instead of, I hear people when they make a mistake, they call themselves stupid. It's like they verbally abuse themselves almost. Well, if you're calling yourself that, then your subconscious mind believes it and it causes you to act out those exact things. So that's one of the biggest things I work with people on, their words. I get them to eliminate such words such as can't, hope, try, but. I don't like the word but. Oh, I want to get promoted, but I'm not able to do this. Or I work on getting them to eliminate the word try. I mean, if my wife tells me today, you know, it's Friday here in Australia already, and she says to me today, hey, do you think you can cut the grass this weekend? And I say, honey, I'll try to get to it. She'll look back at me because she's heard me talk about these things before, and she'll say, does that mean you will do it or you won't do it? Because she knows there's no in between. You either do it or you don't. But try implies doubt. If I had said to you, you know, to you over the email, Alex, oh yeah, I'll try to get on for our podcast this time, then you'd be very doubtful about that. So we treat our goals and ambitions, the house, the vacation, the relationship, we treat that the same way. And then we wonder why it fails over and over again. Anyways, like I said, it would take 2 cups of coffee to get me excited and I go too long-winded.
Well, yeah, Well, how can people get in contact with you if they want to buy you those two cups of coffee?
Yeah, for sure. Please reach out to me. I do have a website, lifecoach8.net, but most people reach out to me on social media. I'm on Instagram and Facebook as lifecoach8, or you can find me very easily just by typing in my name, Max A. Garcia. So those are the two biggest ways, the website or social media. I love social media. It's something that I didn't really get into until right before I retired. And one of my Marines says, "Sergeant Major, you're going to be doing public speaking and life coaching, and you don't use Instagram." So he walked me through all the paces, and now I've got a bunch of followers and things at Life Coach 8 on Instagram. So
nice. Well, I'll check it out there. Well, it's been great having you on, and we'll have those websites as well in the show notes page. And thanks for coming on. Have a great Friday there. It's still Thursday here, but we'll catch up. Well, it'll be Friday here soon.
Yes. Thank you as well for having me, Alex. It's been an honor and privilege. And like I said, I listened to your show and I really enjoy it. And it really is an honor and privilege to be part of it today. Thank you for having me out of all people.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Talk to you next time.
If you're liking Confident ROI, or even if you don't, please leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to this podcast. Thanks. If you'd like a copy of my book, Transform Your Company, please go to confidentroi.com, click on the Hey Vorobyev button, and just request a book. Let us know where you want us to send it to. Thanks.